Bird's Eye View is a member of the Baltimore Sports Report Network. Find more podcasts like this at BaltimoreSportsReport.com. BaltimoreSportsReport.com.
And welcome back to Bird's Eye View. This is your source for a lack of insight and baseless opinion. Today is January 20th, 2014. My name is Scott Magnus, and I'm here with my color commentator, Jake English.
Happy Martin Luther King Day, big boy.
Happy Martin Luther King Day. I'm glad that you had the day off.
Hey, somebody's got to not work.
Yeah, exactly. This is episode 63, and you can be following us at birdseyeviewbaltimore.com. I highly recommend going there and reading all the articles that Jake has time to post while he's not working today. You can also catch us at the baltimoresportsreport.com/network, where you can come across us and the rest of our sister wives that we love to talk about, especially the Shiroka boys and their goats. You can also find us on iTunes at birdseyeviewbaltimore.com/iTunes, facebook.com/BEVcast, Google Plus, for anybody in the world that actually still uses that.
Both of you.
And you can find us on Twitter at Bird's Eye View BAL. That's at Bird's Eye View BAL. And we're darn close to another milestone on Twitter. We're about, 10 or 11 people away from getting to the large number of 600. You know, the amount of home runs that Sammy Sosa hit. Oh, wait.
Really? That's the number you pull? That 600, and that's what you go with?
Sorry, I'm not as good as the Baltimoreans with the number pulling.
At least you didn't say former Oriole, Sammy Sosa.
Yeah. But yeah, follow us on Twitter because we're a lot more witty and playful on there when we only have 140 characters to play with.
Yeah.
In other aspects, too, in order to keep our lights on and to not make our wives angry at us, make it seem like we're actually doing work down here in the SD studios, can you click on that Amazon banner at the top of birdseyeviewbaltimore.com and, you know, buy something there? Because we'd love to get paid somewhat for what we do, even if it's pennies on the dollar. We're a corporate shill. What can we say? We've got to keep the lights on somehow.
Nice, nice. I love that your message is we've got to make money somehow.
Yeah, we got to make some money somehow. I mean, look, you've seen us, everybody. You've seen our pictures. We don't have the legs, and we don't know how to use them.
Yikes. That having been said, Scott, let's advance to my favorite part of the program, and I believe yours, and that is?
The drink of the week.
The drink of the week. Scotty, what are you drinking this week?
I am drinking a Victory Imperial Stout. It's called Storm King. It's quite tasty. Heavy chocolate notes in it.
Okay, fair enough. As you know, I am not manly enough for stout. I instead am drinking a gin and tonic. I know, shocking. Yeah, drink gin and tonic. Back to basics. And with that, what do you think? Maybe some twat?
Let's go to the Twitter, yeah.
This week in the Twitters. A couple of interesting things in the last 2 weeks. One was pretty funny. Bird's Eye View was briefly followed, Scott, by a Baltimore Oriole.
Which one? Like Manny Machado?
A Baltimore Oriole from the 40-man roster followed us for at least 10 minutes.
Wow.
I know, right? Brad Brock, who we signed a free agent formerly from the San Diego Padres. He probably said the same thing about us because he followed us and then he was gone.
Here's the thing. I think that he looked at the picture and saw a bird and he said, it has to be the Orioles Twitter follower. So they followed it and then he looked at it and said, well, there's a bunch of racist comments on here. I don't think this is the Baltimore Orioles.
Right. I'm sure. That's a good plug for our Twitter feed, by the way. No, I think what a lot of these athletes do is they follow everyone they can find and then try to get follows back and then pull them back. That's what I think anyway.
Like Jose Bautista,
who also briefly followed
us. Yeah. Who's got like 37,000 followers.
Or something.
Yeah.
In the last 2 weeks, the MLB Network was tweeting out, they were trying to identify a face of the franchise for each of the franchises in Major League Baseball. For the Orioles, Adam Jones was selected, and we threw together a post about that on birdseyeviewbaltimore.com. Basically, Scott, you and I came up with the fact that it should have been Adam Jones for real, but it could have been a couple others, including Peter Angelos for how things are going in this particular offseason. But something I thought was kind of funny was some of the selections that were possible for the other franchises. I recommended for the Dodgers, for instance, a picture of Benjamin Franklin because they are using all of the $100 bills in the world to pay their players. All of them. All of the dollar bills. I mean, is that fair?
Seems pretty fair to me.
Beyond that, I thought that it would be great if we could get Alex Rodriguez recognized as the face of the franchise for the Yankees, but it was not to be.
Well, Alex Rodriguez had his own special week, needless to say, with the he had his settlement done in the arbitration case on last Saturday, 162 game suspension, and the Yankees are off the hook for $27.1 million. Jake, what are your thoughts?
Oh, that's great. That's the best thing that could have happened. That's that's actually a disaster for the Orioles. I'm so torn in a very Natalie Imbruglia way about what's going on with Alex Rodriguez, the Yankees, Major League Baseball, because on one hand, I want the guy to fry, but on the other hand, it really does seem like a witch hunt, a targeted witch hunt.
I totally agree with you. It's just, I don't know. My beliefs are he deserves to be kicked out, but my other beliefs are I really want to have the Yankees on the hook for the money.
Yeah, it's really frustrating to think that they could get away with it, especially if that is what gets them under the luxury tax and then gives them several years of escalation before they become uncomfortable again, or if it puts them back in the Tanaka market. It's just, it's horrifying to think about.
But there was one really great tweet that I wanted to cover, and that was from @JoseCanseco, and it says, A-Rod, you should contact me. I have some very important information that can help you.
I'm sorry. Jose Canseco.
In fact, he went on like a verbal diatribe to try to communicate with A-Rod. And was like, we need to bring down the man, basically.
That's great. That is trying to help in such a fashion that does no such thing.
That is perfectly correct.
I have no idea how I missed that. Speaking of needing to go back for further review, also baseball announced that it will be doing its replay in baseball. What are your thoughts on the system as it's proposed?
I think it definitely is an improvement. I think it's the aspect of, my biggest thing is they're going to come back in multiple years and come back and refine it further. So this isn't just a one and done. This is an aspect of, this is what we want to try the first year. We want to come back in the future and try some new things. So I am perfectly for it. Let's give it a shot and screw all you baseball purists that say it's not necessary.
Well, here's what I loved about the way they brought the system out, and that is that they're trying to get so many things right, but at the same time, they're trying to be as reasonable as possible. And specifically, what I think is cool that they didn't do is that they didn't make the close enough play at second base for double plays reviewable. The around the area play, if you will. And that's totally about player safety. It's to make sure that second baseman and shortstops aren't hanging in there too long. And I think that's great. I think that's great that they thought about, yes, we could very possibly make it so that every last call is right at second base, but it'll have a negative impact on the game. And so they chose to omit that. And so I think if they're going to take that close eye toward what's good for the game weighed against how important is it to be perfectly accurate all the time about this play, I think it says great things about the system that they've got for introducing and then, as you said, refining review.
Definitely think that's the case. We'll just have to see. There are still going to be blown calls, and I think that's the biggest issue I have is if people in the media are going to blow it out of proportion for saying, we've got instant review, but they still got the call wrong. It's going to happen. Human nature.
Absolutely.
It stinks, but you have to move on. It's just better not happening against the Orioles and the Yankees.
But you look at other sports, that's how it happens. The other thing that's cool about this review is that now the stadiums will be permitted to show the replays on the board, and that's going to be great for the in-game experience for fans. I really think that that's been far too long in coming.
Yeah. We'll see. It'll be interesting to see how the home teams use that to their benefit as well.
Well, I mean, just as anybody does in any of the other sports. I mean, look at football.
Yeah. So, yeah, I understand. It'll be interesting to see what happens with that. But going back to the whole Yankees and Orioles you know, blown calls.
Not that we're bitter.
Yeah. At Orioles fans probs, basically tweeted this week, no more of this Yankee favoritism bullshit. And then posted a few pictures of Yankees that were clearly out and were called safe. We came back with Mark Teixeira sliding into first base and being called out, even though he was safe.
Yes, but most epic facial response ever.
Yes.
By a baseball player.
Yeah.
That blown call was worth just seeing him cry like a whiny baby.
Yeah. And that's basically all that's happened on this week of the Twitter. There's a few other things that happened here or there with the NFL football and stuff like that. But really, people, it's time to get ready for baseball season. Let's make it happen. So with that, I'd like to step away for a second and talk about future things to come for the Orioles season, specifically to us, because what can I say? I like to talk about me.
It's all about you, Scott.
Yeah. Since we know that Orioles season tickets are always a golden ticket for all of us in Birdland.
That's kind of a reach, isn't it?
It's a slight reach. Look, here's the thing. We bought season tickets for the first time last year, and we were both very happy with the decision to go to lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of baseball games. But we've already covered that we've had somewhat of an issue with the let's just say it hasn't been such a golden ticket policy of the Orioles this offseason. From the variable pricing to baseline price increases, it's just been bad PR from the ticket office so far this offseason.
You mean every opportunity they've had to bungle it, they've done it?
Yeah. Another thing that they have bungled is not offering the holiday pack. And I know a lot of people were asking about that, coming back to the situation of, well, my holiday pack was my ability to go out and buy opening day tickets, and there was no holiday pack offer this year. In fact, there was no season tickets even available during the Christmas season, so you couldn't even go out and say, I want to buy season tickets for this person for Christmas. It was, sorry, you're going to have to wait.
Yeah, what the hell are they waiting for? What is taking so long to figure out what kind of demand there are for tickets and then to sell them responsibly?
I just want to point out that the new program that they're having in place is supposed to formulaically have a computer determine what kind of demand there is for tickets. That computer program would have probably been beneficial sometime in like October or November in order to say, hey, you guys are probably going to only sell this many season tickets, so be prepared to work your butts off.
So, let's break this down. The thing is that on one level, yes, this affects us personally, and so, you know, we're going to complain
about grumpy.
It. But the other thing is that for a team that's only had two winning seasons in the last, you know, what, 16 years, they've got to do these things right. And for so long, I've been so sick of watching people beat up the team when it's been, you know, it's just been piling on. And at this point, I feel like they're just asking for trouble with this ticket situation. I mean, let's just look at it. You know, we've talked. I complained about the variable ticket pricing, the fact that they increased their baseline ticket prices. But beyond that, I mean, they've also done some things to the season ticket holders that have made it less convenient. First of all, they've changed the policy on opening day.
Yeah, they went to basically saying that you can only purchase one ticket per opening per seat that you have for season tickets, and that included 13 games, 29 game plans, and also full season ticket plans. I don't quite understand that move at all.
Well, they must have in excess of, you know, half of the stadium worth of season tickets, right?
they actually have to have the full 50,000. Well, it's 47,800 is the full stadium.
No, I'm saying in order to say I can't get two tickets for every
they have,
season ticket.
They've got, you're right.
So what they're telling us by this policy is that they've gotten in excess of 23,000 season tickets. You buy that?
No.
Yeah, me neither. Me neither. So what are they going to do with this hoard of opening day tickets?
Who are we playing?
We're playing the world champion Boston Red Sox.
And who's broadcasting that game?
That would be ESPN2.
Check and mate.
So you think that there's some nefarious plot to keep opening day tickets out of the hands of season ticket holders so that they can sell them to Boston fans? That's your explanation?
Yes.
All right. This is the part of the program where I tell you you're crazy, where I tell you that that is completely inappropriate to even say over the airways, and then I have nothing to back it up with and say, but here's the logical explanation. So let me say that I do not agree with your assessment. However, I have no explanation for why they have changed the ticket policy to A, leave a large number of opening day tickets unaccounted for in my mind, and B, piss off their season ticket holders.
All right. I've got several reasons why this is the case, why they're leaving tickets open for Boston fans.
Okay.
Number one, Dan Duquette previously used to work in the Boston Red Sox organization.
Are any of the reasons going to be better than this?
Yes, they are really good reasons. So again, Dan Duquette is a native Bostonian and has been working undercover to thwart the efforts of the Orioles. See, he got in during the 2012 season and basically put Valentine into position in the Red Sox organization, almost as a rope-a-dope, but he's just setting the Orioles up for the eventual downfall. If he thought Sid Thrift was bad people, just you wait until 2015 and 2016.
Okay. What else do you have for us?
Point two. I have sources that were in the city that went over to Greektown, and they saw Peter Angelos eating a bowl of New England clam chowder soup.
Okay, yeah, you've convinced me. Next point.
Number three. The NSA is located close to Baltimore. Okay.
All right.
And there was a terrorist plot.
All right, I'm going to give you the hook right there. So you're saying that you think that there's some way that they want to go ahead and give tickets to the Boston fans. That's fine. I would understand this policy. I really would. If they came to us as ticket holders and they said, look, we're going to make an adjustment to the opening day ticket policy. We are going to make a policy that if you have a 81 game or 29 game plan, you get your regular, two times your number of seats policy for opening day tickets, 13 game holders, and anybody with a mini plan smaller than that, because they should be giving out, holiday packs, no deal. Okay. You get one and that's it. I would understand that. I'd say, okay, changing nature of the business, more demand, that's fine. This is crazy talk.
Yeah, I understand that. My aspect would be go ahead and do this one per seat and then come back and then say, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to do a pre-sale tickets for full game season, full season ticket plan holders, then 29 game plan holders, and then 13 game plan holders, and then open it up to the public.
Right. And that may very well happen. It would be nice if they would have a plan from the beginning and they would be a little more transparent about it. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if they would just tell us, look, we've got this cachet of opening day tickets. We're going to make sure that we've got first the demand covered of make sure everybody gets a season ticket plan that that wants them. And then from there we'll disseminate them. But at this point, it just looks stupid, and that's becoming the Orioles' MO.
It looks poorly thought out. Speaking about ticket debates, one other thing that came up this week, and it was actually more so on the football side, was that the Seattle Seahawks basically kept tickets from being purchased by Californians. They were able to open it up to various states within the Washington area, but not in California, to prevent 49ers fans from coming up now up into the Seattle area. Good thing, bad thing, indifferent?
I think it's a great thing.
Okay, I think it's a great thing too. And the Orioles did do this in the 2012 playoff season. They did it to specifically try to have that home field advantage for game one and game two of the ALDS and to keep Yankees fans out. However, for all of us that were there, we did come across Yankees fans. So it doesn't keep them out completely because, again, third-party vendors can come in there and buy the tickets as well.
Well, that, and you have a large number of fans from, you know, Linthicum who have always been Yankees fans or always been Boston fans since 2004.
Right. So speaking of that, I had an idea. I would have an idea that we should take a video camera at opening day and we should go to Red Sox fans and interview them and find out where they are from and where they're staying.
And card them?
Yeah, and card them. You think this is a great idea?
I love carding Boston fans at Camden Yards. It's the best thing ever.
Okay. I think this is a great video segment. We can go and ask them about, you know, where they're staying, you know, how long they've been here. And then we can ask them how the terrorist explosion impacted them.
You gave a New Year's resolution that you weren't doing that anymore. All right. So I have no problem with the localized ticket thing. I think it's good. A nice way to have the home team look out for its fans. And it certainly portrays the game the way the league wants on TV. I mean, you don't want a game that's quiet and, you know, you don't want a game that's got, you know, a divisive crowd. You want that image of, like, are they calling it Quest Field in Seattle? Is that what it's called? You know, however many thousand strong screaming in unison for their home team. Yeah. That's the product that the NFL and any other major sport wants to show.
You want an experience when you go and put your hard-earned money onto it. And speaking of which, the Orioles are making that experience come true with some of their recent signings over the past few weeks. Why are you giving me the cut sign? Is that not accurate?
Have you watched the Orioles offseason?
Honestly, I just was hoping for the best. So we'll take a quick break and you can brief me on what happened over the past few weeks. I'm looking through.
All right, Scotty, so you want to take a look through the off-season moves that we've seen recently. Look, nothing good has happened recently. In fact, the best news that we've had recently in what might be the signature move of the Orioles off-season thus far, as sad as that is, the Orioles signed Delmon Young. The Orioles signed Delmon Young as, I guess, a designated hitter, and maybe occasional outfield play, but this is a guy who had some off the field troubles. This is a guy that had
Jake. He's more racist than I am. Okay.
Well, okay, that's a start, I guess. The other thing about him is that he had a good year in 2010, but that was 4 years ago at this point.
Yeah, and that was when he was a rookie of the year, right?
He was a highly touted first overall draft pick. But this is what the Orioles have done. They have started signing guys that aren't worth a lick anymore. Now, Delmon Young might turn out to be a useful piece, but it's just a useful piece, and we haven't seen anything else beyond those useful pieces. Look, in addition to Delmon Young, there are also rumors that the Orioles might be interested in signing Jack Cust as a DH. Jack Cust. Yeah, okay. Jack Cust, by the way, who was an embarrassment for the Orioles in 2003, 11 years ago. It was 11 years ago when he fumbled, bumbled, and stumbled around third base.
How many times?
Two? It was two. Yeah, it was two. Look, I don't know why the Orioles would think that guy had anything left. I don't understand why they would go back to an embarrassment of an Oriole from so far. There has to be better stuff out there. There just has to. I mean, I don't understand why they'd be willing to give out a contract to Delmon Young to be able to think about a guy like Jack Cust and then not even make a play for other, you know, low-risk, high-reward guys. I mean, you know, isn't Grady Sizemore still out there?
I don't think Grady Sizemore's out there anymore.
They should have signed him earlier instead of this other litany of guys that they brought. This is why the Orioles offseason is so frustrating. In my own humble opinion, and Scott, you can tell me where I'm wrong, the O's are really only two signings away, I think, from having a pretty successful offseason. Without making any excuses for the team or being an Oriole apologist, I think that these two moves would really shift the entire tenor of the offseason.
Just as an FYI, Grady Sizemore has not signed yet, but he is in serious talks with the Cincinnati Reds.
Oh, well, I'm so relieved.
Yeah.
All right, but here are my two moves, okay?
Okay.
You bring in a legit designated hitter.
Okay, name.
I don't even want to bring names into it at this point. I think the best person on the board that's left at this point is probably Morales, Kendrys Morales.
Okay, continue.
And the second move is a legit starter.
Okay, who is that?
My pick of the guys that are still on the board is Bronson Arroyo.
Okay.
And I think that Bronson Arroyo is a legit starter because he's going to give you innings, because he's a veteran who's played well in the NL Central, which is no joke.
Right.
Okay. And he's also a guy that you don't have to commit lots of years and lots of money to, which makes him attainable for the Orioles.
Okay. First of all, Kendrys Morales is completely out because one of the 12 outfielders that we currently have on the roster is going to be the DH. Nay, I say that, take that back. Two of the left fielders that are on those 12 outfielders is going to be our DH. So Nolan Reimold or Loth or someone of those is going to, Uridia is going to be one of those DHs. So,
but I'm saying that's the problem with the offseason approach.
I understand that. Now, he's out the window. Let's forget about Morales. Again, first-round draft pick. The Orioles don't want to give up a first-round draft pick for Morales. He's gone. He gone, okay? Just like we thought Nolan Reimold was going to be gone, he gone. Arroyo is another interesting topic, and I think Arroyo and all the rest of the starting pitchers that are in free agency are going to start falling next week. After Tanaka basically is signed, and he's got to make that decision by the end of this week, that's when all the other free agents pitchers are going to start falling into place because the market will have been set and someone's going to say, oh, the Cubs didn't get Tanaka. The Cubs now have to go out and get so-and-so. Oh, these guys didn't get Tanaka, so there you're going to go out and get it. Like, I could easily see like
the dominoes will fall.
Like, you could easily see like the Dodgers going out and saying, oh, we didn't get Tanaka. We want to go get Bronson Arroyo for a year or two. That might have changed now that they actually have Kershaw on the hook for God knows how many years.
A gazillion dollars.
Oh, my God. I cannot imagine how much Mike Trout is going to make and Manny Machado is going to make in the future. There's a joke going on Twitter, and I hate to keep going back to Twitter, but Dan Zabrowski basically has said when Mike Trout comes up for his contract, it's going to be all the money of the world to Mike Trout in order to try to keep him.
They're basically he's going to own whatever franchise that he goes to play for.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right, so you don't like my names, and that's fine. But
No. I like the Arroyo name. I just think we have to be patient. So I'm being an Orioles apologist here, folks.
Oh, Lord.
You have to wait at least another week before I come back here and am bitter and yelling and just annoying, just like Jake English is tonight.
Well, let's do this. Let's take the names out, and let me tell you why these two moves would make the offseason more palpable for me.
Okay.
All right, and again, you shoot holes where is appropriate.
Okay.
Let's start with that DH, whoever he may be.
Okay.
The legit DH. With a legit DH in this already potent lineup, fielding a team with an all-glove, little-hit second baseman is an acceptable approach. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, all right. With a legitimate DH in this, again, already potent lineup, putting a question mark in left field, like to me, who Lowe represents a question mark to me, and he, in my opinion, is the front runner for the left field position. Or even if you want to say you're going to stick Nolan Reimold out there for three games until he gets hurt, going in with a left fielder who is a question mark to me is an acceptable risk when you already have a legit lineup with that DH present.
Can I step in here for a second too?
Please.
For the legit DH, I'd also throw out two other aspects. The one aspect I have a big issue with is Matt Wieters batting in the fifth hole. And with having a legit DH in Kendrys Morales or someone that actually had some, you know, better numbers than Matt Wieters, it forces Matt Wieters to go down lower in the lineup. It forces Matt Wieters to be either number six or number seven in the lineup. And honestly, that's where he needs to be. He needs to have that pressure taken off of him so that he can just start hitting normally as opposed to trying to hit for power. And I think he would really improve his batting average and also his on-base percentage.
And you've hit the nail on the head because you're so right about Matt Wieters, but you're also right about JJ Hardy.
Yes.
And you're right about everybody else in that club who's been filling a role that maybe they're not suited for. You look at a guy like Matt Wieters just offensively and you think to yourself, does that guy, just his numbers, have a role on a good club? Yeah. Probably he does, especially because he's a defensive whiz. But that role is not hitting fifth or sixth.
Okay.
So you get that legit guy, and you put Matt Wieters offensively where he belongs. And that's acceptable on a good club.
All right. The other argument that you made about the left fielder, I don't really buy as much. I don't think the DH is really impacting that. The one thing I wanted to bring up with the left fielder, and specifically going back to Nate McClouse. Nate McClouse, when we started last year, we ran into the problem where we had three potential leadoff hitters. We had Nick Markakis, Brian Roberts, and Nate McLaughlin. And now we're left with one leadoff hitter, really, in Nick Markakis. So this raises the interesting question. Nick Markakis in the number one hole. You hope Manny Machado is healthy, even though all indications say that he will be back. He's in the number two hole. And then you're left with, you know, Davis and Jones in the number three and number four hole. And then you get to that number five hole, like we just brought up, and it's the aspect of, I guess we'll put Matt Wieters there. And
whoever's left.
Yeah. Yes.
My point is that you add that, if you add that DH, and again, I use the word legit DH, and you can define that however you want. You can bring in a guy with high OBP who, you know, has occasional pop. You can bring in a guy with a lot of pop who's not going to have a million strikeouts. Whatever that DH looks like that you can put in the middle of the lineup, that lets everybody else do their role. And right now we have guys that are being signed to minor league contracts who should be, you know, trying out for roles that are instead trying out for legitimate spots in the lineup. If Delmon Young is going to be our DH, that's a problem because he should be fighting to get onto a club as a bit part player.
Okay. Now the only argument I'll make about this legit DH is when you're looking at legit DH, like Kendrys Morales, he literally can play no other position than DH, really. He could play first base, but really you're not going to do that.
But the thing is, and again, and I do this offensively and defensively, we're set in so many positions. We did this a couple of weeks ago when we decided we were going to look, you know, positively. If you look around the diamond, we're set. We've got 12 left fielders that we have to pick one from. Any one of those guys.
Probably two.
Okay. Any one of those guys is going to be able to field the position, right?
We'll see about
that. With at least decent defense to the point where you don't need to put a guy like Morales there. We're set in center. We're set in right. We're set at first. We're set at second, even though it's Ryan Flaherty. We're set in...
Hey, don't be dissing Mr. F.
I am.
I'm here to support you, Charlie.
We're set at short. We're set at third, hopefully. We don't need him to fill any other shoes. We need him to hit. We need somebody to hit. And we need somebody to hit, get on base, and do it with runners in scoring position.
All right. Moving on. Let's go to starter.
The second move that I talked about was the starter. If we get a legit starter, the back end of the rotation ends up sliding into places where they belong. Again, I talked about the offense, you know, where does people belong in a good club. If you look at a back end of the rotation of Chen, Gonzalez, and Norris, could those guys be 3, 4, and 5 on a good club?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
All right. I happen to disagree. I happen to think if you have two good starters to anchor a rotation, and then you have Chen, Gonzalez, and Norris, you're going to be fine.
Cool.
Especially because what the Orioles do have is depth. Now, if they get starts from those guys, you're going to be fine. If you can get starts from those three guys, you're going to be fine. If you have to go super deep into your depth of starters to the point where you're starting 13 guys over the course of the season, you're going to be in trouble anyway. So you're telling me you don't think that those three guys can hold down the back end of a rotation for a good club?
No. I think two of those guys can.
Which two you got?
Chen and Gonzalez.
Okay. So your problem is with Norris.
My problem is with Norris. Here's the thing. I agree totally with you. Great. Let's go get Bronson Arroyo. Let's go get another starter as well. And then kick Norris to the curb.
Look, I'm not trying to be greedy here. I'm trying to make the point that I think with
listen to me very carefully. We just went through the whole season ticket things. We are greedy people, okay? The rest of Orioles Nation are greedy people. Give us AJ Burnett. Give us Bronson Arroyo. Let's make something happen this year.
I'm trying to point out that with these two moves, I would be fine with the other crap that they've piled on us.
No. If you're not going to go out and get a closer, push Norris to the bullpen. You can put Gausman out in the bullpen, at least also get him some innings as well out there, just like Palmer did back in the day when he was starting out in the major leagues. This is an excellent opportunity. You can also throw Chen and Gonzalez out there in the bullpen later on in the season if they need some rest, because you know they're going to need rest.
Getting a good starter that's going to give you 200
innings. Two starters.
Getting a good starter,
two starters,
who's going to give you innings, will take that pitching depth, turn it into an asset, and avoid it being a carousel of desperation, which was really what it was in 2013. It was like, oh my God, can you throw? I'm going to need you every fifth day for about a week until somebody else can come in and suck just as bad.
Okay, I understand. Look, it's quite simple. Baltimore Orioles, go sign someone that is a top 50 free agent. Do it now. Enough of these minor league deals. Do it. Don't be signing. Here are the guys. Delmon Young, Alexi Casilla, Quinton Berry, Francisco Peguero. Oh, and we also got Jameel Weeks for Jim Johnson.
We also just signed Tyler Colvin.
Oh, Tyler Colvin. I forgot about Tyler Colvin. The only good thing about Tyler Colvin is he probably eliminates Jack Cuss from the equation. So, Tyler Colvin.
That is good. But again, with two significant moves, I think that the rest of this offseason just becomes noise. You know, we don't have to freak out about taking flyers on low-risk guys to be a role player. I think my concern and a lot of fans' concerns is that these role players are being pushed into too prominent a role because of the Orioles' offseason activity.
And lack of it.
Right. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think, honestly, if we had our lineup set with a more prominent DH in the middle of it, I wouldn't feel so bad about Alexi Casilla being signed to a minor league deal to try to be the utility guy. That wouldn't bother me.
Yeah, and it's not just that, too. It's that other Orioles have now started to notice as well. Jake, you posted a blog on Bird's Eye View regarding Chris Davis speaking out about, let's just say, the lack of Orioles moves in the offseason. The one thing that I thought was really interesting was, do we want to talk about it, or do we just want to listen to him a little bit and see what he has to say?
I would listen to Chris Davis read the side of a cereal box.
All right, well, let's listen to him really quickly.
I don't know how you improve on what you did last year. I mean, you'll try and find ways. I mean, go ahead. I mean, that was as good as anybody did last year. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, how much is it you guys, instead of looking on the outside, looking at each other to try and get better from a year ago to next year?
Well, I think it's huge. And I think at the end of every season, you know, you're obviously going to sit down and kind of assess how everything's gone, you know, places that you did well, things that you could get better at. And I think as a competitor, every guy in that clubhouse feels confident with a group of guys that we have. We rely on each other.
I think we need a closer,
we count on
right?
each other a lot, and we expect each other to go into the offseason pushing, push ourselves, you know, try to get better, find little ways that you
year.
Can, you know, raise the level of competition and really, you know, take the competition to the other team. But we also understand
like
that, you know, there are places where we need to upgrade as a team. I think, last year, obviously our starting pitching, we had some guys that were up and down. We had some guys that were consistent for us, but I think that
our
bullpen was a little taxed, you know, in the middle of the season, just having to go out there and work so much. You know, I think that we need a little bit of help starting pitching wise, and you know, we have everything we need as far as defense and offense are concerned. I think we led the league in defense. Manny pretty much led the league by himself in defense, but. You know, I think that.
All right, so you guys get the general gist. Is Chris Davis just like, hey, we got a pretty good defense, and you know, we hit the long ball, but you know, it'd be nice is to have our pitchers go more than six innings.
I love the fact that he's not afraid to do that, and the thing is, you know, he signed that $10.35 million 1 year contract, and as soon as that happened, you know, he started getting asked questions, and he started answering them honestly,
right,
and not disrespectfully. But honestly.
Yeah, he just raised the question, too, of whether Puck is going to call him up and say, what the fuck are you doing?
Look, you're right. This team needs pitching, and that's clear. But I really don't think that the Orioles are so far away that they couldn't make two, you know, or just a couple concise moves to really push a team that's pretty good into the point where they can compete.
Not to mention, you're also kind of bridging the gap right now between the time when Dylan Bundy and Gausman is going to be ready as well to be actually go into your rotation. So that's why a move like Arroyo and Burnett would actually be kind of useful. They could do some mentoring for both those pitchers in the future as well. Just do something, Orioles. It's as simple as that. You're losing credibility within your fan base from the way that you're handling your ticket prices. You're losing credibility with your players. Look, players wanted to come and play for you, and that's slowly starting to wane. The magic of Buck can only last for so long.
I mean, and think about it. You know, Ryan Webb signed with the Orioles almost right away because he wanted to come here.
Right.
You know, he wanted to come here because he saw a team that was on the rise, that was doing all the right things, that was a good club, and he was going to have a chance to make the playoffs. That's a key way to affect free agency. And on the other side, You're going to chase away your own free agents if you don't keep them happy by fielding a competitive club around them. I mean, what happens when Matt Wieters and Chris Davis are eligible for free agency and they've seen nothing happen? You know, Chris Davis is basically testing the Orioles to say, look, I want to sign here long term. Get me pitching.
Right. Do something or else I'm gone. All right. I'm done hashing over this topic. Time to move on. Orioles, you're kind of on notice. But you know who's really on notice? Let's go find out in The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly.
That's right, it is time for The Good, The Bad, and The Ugly. As is our custom, Scott Magnus is amazing at this, so he's going to go last. Scotty, is it okay if I go ahead to my good?
No, you go right to your good.
All right, Scott, my good this week, 23, 38, 69.
Pardon me?
My good this week is 23, 38, 69.
Those lotto numbers or something?
No. See, today is January 20th, 2014, and in 23 days, pitchers and catchers report to spring training. In 38 days, the Orioles make their 2014 Grapefruit League debut, and in 69 days, you and I will be sitting down to watch the Baltimore Orioles open up against the Boston Red Sox on opening day. Scott, my good this week is that I can start to see the light at the end of the tunnel. 23, 38, 69.
Okay, that actually follows pretty close to what mine was, but I actually could have visualized mine. And mine is going to go back to Orioles minicamp pictures on Twitter. It almost made me feel like spring was here for a brief few days, and then it all kind of just vanished. But it was nice to see baseball being played in beautiful Sarasota. So that's my good for the week. Baseball in January.
And I think those pictures were basically at the... We can thank Rock Cabaco and Eduardo Encina from the Baltimore Sun for those two picture, sets of pictures, because I think that's where they were all coming from. All right. My bad for this week is going to be to the fans, quote unquote, who got up early. They bought FanFest ticket autograph vouchers and then immediately put them on sale on eBay for huge markups. Really? Really? You're going to buy a ticket voucher so that somebody can get an autograph from a guy like Larry Bigby, and then you're going to sell it for a high profit? This is terrible. Look, I know this is American. We're all about capitalism and all this kind of crap, but really, is nothing sacred? Is nothing sacred that you can't let people just buy autograph vouchers? I don't care about autograph vouchers. I'm not a big autograph guy, but it seems to me that it's just a shame that people got up and they you know, went to their computers and immediately those tickets were all sold out. And now, you know, you gotta pay some serious cash to go ahead and get autographs from the guys that you want to see.
Yeah, it's a shame. I know that the Chris Davis and the Machado autographs pretty much went instantly within like the first 2 minutes.
Sure.
So. Yeah, that sucks, but it's no Wilson Betemeet, so moving on. My bad for this week is going to be going to Craig Biggio missing out on the Hall of Fame vote by 2 votes.
Yeah, it sucks.
I don't know how a person can sleep for the rest of the year knowing that they missed out by 2 votes and knowing that Murray Chase basically said, I don't want to vote for you because I've heard a report that you had back knee. The fact that back knee kept me out of the Hall of Fame would keep me up day in and day out.
You know, guys, this was before the day of testing, but it was also before the days of proactive. I mean, let's be fair here.
Yeah, exactly. And if one thing Kelly Clarkson has taught me is I can have beautiful skin just like her.
It's what I want.
Yeah. All right, Jake, who's your ugly for this week?
My ugly for this week is not so much a person, it's a situation.
Okay, go on.
And that situation is the ongoing Matt Wieters arbitration situation. I think this has every chance of getting ugly. You know, Matt Wieters and the Orioles apparently are about $2 million apart. And rather than just splitting the difference and giving him a salary of $1 million more than what he asked for, this is still going on and they're still negotiating. This is why it's ugly, because I think it's a primer for the long-term contract negotiations. You know, obviously, Matt Wieters' representatives want to get him the most amount of money because, frankly, you know, he's not turned into the offensive star that he was expected to be, and they're trying to set his market value as much as they can now before they really have to go fight for it in the offseason. And these things can get really dicey between the clubs and between the players where, you know, if they go to arbitration, things are going to get said that people don't want to hear. You know, and the last thing that we want is Matt Wieters basically having a foul taste in his mouth for the Orioles, for the process, for negotiating with them if we want to keep him here. So unless this gets done and it gets done before it goes to arbitration, I think it has a very good chance of being ugly.
Okay. My ugly this week is going to be a little different, just like it is always every week. But I decided to go into our Jeopardy vaults. You know how Jeopardy normally does a question? And then for a daily double, sometimes they'll do like a video or they'll do like an audio daily double.
I am so frightened right now. Yes.
Well, I decided to kind of go down that similar vein. So
Oh God.
This is going to be my ugly for the week, everybody. So let's just listen to this. And best part of all, Jake hasn't even heard this yet. So this is his first time hearing it.
Tell me, Dan, who are we signing this time?
Oh, God.
Is he from this decade or 1999? All I wanted you to do was not have someone pass their prime. But you took that away, you didn't mind. Instead, you promised me to get someone from back in time.
This is horrifying.
Someone from back in time. Don't bet your future on an anti-Semite. You should have never signed Alexia twice. Don't sign Jack Cust again. Don't want him falling again. So take these retreads away. I kind of mind. You made promises, but instead you went back in time.
You are a gifted musician, sir.
You went back in time. Went back in time. Back in time.
So with that, Dan Duquette, you're on notice.
No, Scott, you're on notice. Don't think that was going to get by. What? I have to be honest. I feel partially responsible for posting a picture on Facebook of the DeLorean. This is my fault.
Got me to thinking.
That was a nice surprise, Scott. Next time you tell me you're going to surprise me for Good, Ben, the Ugly, I'll be sick on that day that we need to record.
Yeah, I knew you were going to like that. So,
wow.
So how do you come back from that? You know, what's a perfect time? It's time to blow the save.
As if it hasn't been blown already. I actually have a quick little topic I wanted to go through if you've got the time.
Go ahead.
I was watching actually a replay of wall-to-wall baseball, and Tom Davis made an interesting point I'm going to let you get over the shock. But he basically talked about a blossoming Orioles-Rays rivalry in the fact that in the 2012 season, the difference between the Orioles or the Rays making the playoffs was a couple of one-run games, and that the Orioles were really in it in 2013 until they played the Rays in September. And you and I talked about that 18-inning game being what took the breath out of them for being able to make the playoffs. You know, in previous years, it was just between the two of them to see who was going to be in the cellar. And now that the two clubs are pretty decent, maybe there is a burgeoning Orioles-Rays rivalry that will be recognized at some point. What are your thoughts?
The comments that Buck has made over the Tampa Bay's trainer is disparaging. I think the aspect where Buck is constantly shifting into certain defensive metrics that rival the Rays is really interesting. I definitely can see this as the bottom-dwelling retread rivalry that we've always sought to have.
All right. Well, on that note, I think this save is officially blown.
This save is, well, it was already blown when I was singing before, but
I thought we promised not to do that again.
I say, I just had to try something new.
Oh, Lord. Well, with that, Baltimore and beyond, first of all, I'll apologize for Scott. Second of all, I will bid you a fond adieu. Adieu.
Good night, Baltimore.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.